Welcome to Community Conversations, a monthly program on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson, and this evening we'll be talking about police and community, police and community in general, and our police, our community. The killings of two unarmed black men by white police officers in Missouri and New York this summer touched off protests and a national debate over police conduct that intensified after grand juries declined to indict the officers. Tensions escalated further after two New York City police officers were killed last month by a man who suggested in online posts that their slayings were in retaliation for the deaths of Michael Brown in Ferguson and Eric Garner in New York City. Black lives matter. Blue lives, meaning police officers' lives, matter. Here in Duluth, we like to think that all lives matter, and in our comparatively small town, with a comparatively small number of people of color, we like to think that we don't have the kinds of issues and tensions that you find in other places around the nation. Tonight, we're going to talk about black lives and blue lives and how they intersect here in our community. We'll find out what we're doing right, what we need to take a second look at, and what lessons, if any, we can glean from the national discussion on these topics. Let's meet our guests.
I'm Scott Vollum. I'm an associate professor in the Sociology-Anthropology Department at the University of Minnesota, Duluth.
I am Gordon Ramsey. I'm the chief of police for the city of Duluth.
And I'm Claudia Washington, president of the NAACP Duluth branch.
Let's start with a perspective on Ferguson and New York City and the deaths of the police officers in December. Claudia, some impressions?
First of all, what happened in Ferguson and New York City could very well happen anywhere in America. And I think that it's a great opportunity for us to come together and address all of the issues of community and police relationships. And the time to do it is yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Gordon?
Yeah, I would say post-Ferguson, after the incident there and after the incident in New York City, I would say that Duluth is different in a couple different ways. One is I think our relationships with our community members are much different. When you look at Ferguson, the fact that a large percentage of their city budget comes from traffic fines, when you look at the feelings from the citizens on the occupying force that they felt the police department was, you look at the mayor's survey from earlier this year that 93% of the citizens of Duluth, 93% felt that our department was fair, good, or excellent. I don't think you'd see those numbers in those communities. Now, I'm not saying there isn't a lot of work to be done, particularly with our communities of color, but I do say that, you know, in relationships to how fines and forfeitures are done here, it's different than what was happening at Ferguson. I think our relationships are different. Our focus on community policing is different.
Scott, what about your take on the events of the summer and into this winter?
I do believe that Duluth is different in its nature from some of the departments that have had these issues. But I also believe it could happen here. And I think that the important thing to recognize with that is that what we're seeing is a situation where a single incident or a single tragic incident can actually be blown up and constructed into a bigger problem of police in a particular community. One of the things that's interesting is that I think attention and a conflict that has probably been there for certain populations for a long time is now brought into much sharper relief with the social media aspect and kind of bringing it to the general public. And so we're seeing a much greater explosion of concern about this and reaction to this, some of it violent, some of it, most of it nonviolent, but certainly some action being taken in the streets, at least, and also in police departments, I'm thinking, and in things like this with community conversations. So from that, I would say that what's happened is we've kind of reached a really critical juncture at which we need to start asking the difficult questions of how are we going to move forward in terms of community police relations. My fear is that what we're seeing right now is greater polarization between police and the community. in the way that things are being reacted to. There's probably a lack of real communication going on that needs to happen. And I guess for me, something that probably needs to be focused on is, how do we build a path of empathy? And I mean empathy in both directions. How do we better understand as a community the experiences and the perspectives of marginalized populations when it comes to their interactions with police? But also, how do we better understand the experiences and perspectives of law enforcement as they attempt to do their jobs in very difficult situations?
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because it leads nicely into my next question. Claudia, I have a little thought experiment for you and for Gordon. If you could somehow magically get inside the heads of the police officers from Ferguson, the police officers in New York City, and know without a doubt that they did not take action out of racism, but they did in fact act in response to a threat that they perceived, how would that change anything?
I think it would if indeed it was only a threat. I think that what you hear the members of the community saying, that there have been problems before. This is just one of the incidents. It almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. Although there are some representation on the Ferguson police force, it's clearly imbalanced. And I think that much of the work that's happening in our community in Duluth, had it been going on in Ferguson that incident, the Brown incident, would have been, I think it would have been less volatile, because people would have looked at the whole situation a lot more objective.
Gordon, what about you? If you could somehow get inside the minds of those police officers magically and know without a doubt that their actions were motivated by racism, how would that change things?
That's a big question. Well, obviously, you know, when we hire police officers, there's an extensive process that we go through, psychological testing, a lot of interviews, extensive background testing. You know, we look for signs of racism. Now, everybody's got bias in them. But what I would move it to is some of our things that we've been doing here. One is that Minnesota's process to become a police officer filters out a lot of the people that we'd like to see in our profession, those with life experience, those individuals that maybe are second career people, maybe that have been social workers or teachers, done other things. In Minnesota, if you don't become a police officer right out of, you know, in college, it's very difficult to get into our profession, because you have to go a certain route in Minnesota. You have to get a certain degree. You have to attend academy on your own dime. Our system in Minnesota filters out the very candidates that we want. People of color, if they don't initially decide that's what they want to do as a police officer, for them to go back to school, it creates a hardship for many, many people. And we're trying to break down the bureaucracy that exists to get the kind of police officers we want in the door that people like Claudia and our community members expect. But right now, the majority of candidates we get are in their 20s, and they are straight out of either a two-year or four-year school with criminal justice or law enforcement. And so we're missing out on people that have faced a lot of adversity in their life or have that life experience, maturity, that we want to see on the departments.
I think that's a really, really interesting point that I hadn't really thought about, was that the police departments may be wishing to be able to hire less what we might call conventional candidates. And I mean, being a college professor, obviously being exposed to students that are getting ready to go into that, and this is not to say that many of them aren't ready to be great law enforcement, but, you know, they're often fed by a particular perspective as well as what it means to be a police officer. And that perspective is skewed, I think, by media representation. I don't think there's any question there. And so without the life experience, without the more kind of critical assessment of what it means to be a part of a community, even, and then obviously what it means to be in a position of authority within that community, I think you're right. I think that if we could bring in people that come from different places at different times in their lives, I think to me that is an essential piece if we're going to try to move back toward a more a peace officer type of perspective in law enforcement, which to me is something that we need to think about given what we're experiencing in our communities. And, you know, without if you're only recruiting those or you're only those are able to be hired are the ones that have this very specific model of what it means to be a police officer and haven't learned beyond that at that point, then it's really hard to make such a move to that model of policing. So that's a really interesting point to hear.
You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. We're talking about the relationships between police and the community nationally and here at home this evening. Our guests in the studio are Claudie Washington, longtime member of the NAACP here in Duluth, Chief of Police Gordon Ramsey, and Scott Vollum, an Associate Professor of Sociology and Anthropology here at UMD. To take the spotlight off you guys for just a minute and maybe turn it the other way, I'm going to ask you what you think the news media's role in this is. Here's an article that was published on Truth Out after the police officers were shot in December, and a paragraph that I highlighted said, "There was no comparable national frenzy in June of last year when a white couple with possible ties to Clive Bundy's white supremacist militia movement shot two Nevada police officers and left a note on one of their dead bodies proclaiming the beginning of the revolution." And that shooting did not receive the same kind of attention as the shooting of the two police officers in New York. Claudie?
What typically happened in the media, as an example, there were many things that happened during the airplane crash, during the hostage takeover in France, that subverted the attention, averted the attention of the media to a place that ignored. I don't know exactly what was going on in the media at the time that those incidents happened in Nevada, was it? I don't know what was going on in the media at that time. But I think you're right. Typically, many of those types of incidents do not get the kind of media coverage. And for whatever reason, sometimes they may be legitimate reason because of a national or another issue, you know, sort of eats up all the news. There's a limited amount of time that they have to, you know, to present the news. And so we don't get the story. I'm concerned that the police department themselves did not insist that information would be more widely broadcast. And so you take information officers on all sides and groups on all sides who normally keep the attention of those kind of incidents public. Had it not been the demonstrations in Ferguson and in New York City, it would have been, you know, the media would not have given it attention. And so, obviously, I'm not sure what community that happened in Nevada, how large it was, but that's another part of the problem, too, is what's the community response to that?
Gordon, what do you think about the media's role in this?
We have issues with race relations. When I was in college here 24, 25 years ago, I thought we had the formula for good police relations, right? It was community policing. It's interacting in positive ways with community members, things like the Citizens Police Academies, Police Activities Leagues for Youth. You know, but something happened after 9/11 where a lot of the community policing money, where we used to have a significant portion of our officers funded by, dried up and it was moved to Homeland Security. That's where you see some of the, you know, the weaponry, the large emergency vehicles that have become controversial. The community policing money essentially was moved to Homeland Security. And with that, a lot of police departments' philosophies, policing styles changed to the more traditional route, and we got away from community policing. Now, here we've always focused on community policing, but many departments did, and I suspect that a couple of the departments that are having the issues got away from community policing. But I think the bottom line is this particular African-American community feels distrustful of the police. And that is something we can't ignore, and it needs to change. We've been talking about it forever. And keep in mind, I am embarrassed at some of the things that my profession has done in the past, and I'm sorry for what they've done. But the bottom line is that we are where we are today, and we need to make it a priority. We cannot continue to allow the African American community to feel that they are treated differently by police. I was asked recently about the disproportionate amount of arrests, because we know that we do arrest African Americans at a higher percentage than whites. And I think policing, it highlights a bigger problem, right? So not only is it policing, but it's also educational. It's also health. It's also, you know, socioeconomic issues. There's an issue that that we have to get together with the problems that African Americans face in our society. It's not just police. It's many different issues. It's much bigger issues than just policing. But it highlights that, you know, we've got to focus on this and do what we can to help African Americans not only have confidence in their police departments, but in the educational system, in the social services system, and serve African Americans the best we can.
I guess I'm looking forward to some education of the community in terms of what their rights are, and maybe to listen to police officers participate in the education of the community about what authority they have and what authority do people have when they have contact with the police on the street. I think that we're looking at a model that maybe we can use to help facilitate that discussion. We had a Kwanzaa celebration a couple of weeks ago, and a query of the young kids there, probably ages anywhere from 4 or 5 up to, say, 12 or 13 years old. The inquiry, the question was raised, is do they like police officers? And at least one third of them raised their hand and said no. When asked why, many of them, for kids, because they don't know what the duty of the police officers are, didn't like the police officer because they took their father away, they took their stepfather away, and locked them up, you know, and took him out of the home, and that's all they can respond to. And so, to me, education has to start very early in terms of changing the image that people have of police officers, and they very much need to be a part of that education process. So I'm looking forward to more work being done in that area.
You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. We're talking about the relationships between police and the community nationally and here at home this evening. Our guests in the studio are Claudie Washington, longtime member of the NAACP here in Duluth, Chief of Police Gordon Ramsey, and Scott Vollum, an Associate Professor of Sociology and Anthropology here at UMD.
I agree that the place to bring a conflict with the police is not in the incident on the street, and to do so in court and through the, you know, the official process. One problem I have with that perspective is that, although I agree that it's absolutely true, we have to recognize that there is a large population of individuals who don't have any more faith in that court system and that process than they do in the police. We have to try to understand that there is a group of people out there whose historical and even very recent experience in the criminal justice system does not support the fact that their voice will be heard by going through that process, or that they will be respected, or that there will be any ability for them to reach justice. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't encourage people to trust that process. I'm saying we need to understand that there's a reason some people don't. And so in that moment, it's not going to be as simple as it would be for me to be like, okay, I'm going to just submit at this point and we'll deal with this later, because fighting a police officer in the street is not going to be in my interest. And somebody else may feel that that's the only place to take a stand for them. But I also wanted to address the media question. If you're looking at what the media does, I would say they take on the role of building conflict. Media, news media, is about telling the story that's going to draw the listeners or the viewers. And to have a good story, you need an antagonist. You need a protagonist. There's not going to be as good of a story if you can't draw that usually false dichotomy that it's this group against this group, that we have this conflict. And so I think, unfortunately, sometimes wittingly, sometimes unwittingly, the media just serves to create greater polarization, and they build that story in that way. And that's a very unfortunate thing. A good example of this is something you mentioned at the very beginning was Black Lives Matter. Blue Lives Matter. These are very interesting little mantras that get put out there. And what gets lost in that is that lives matter, period. That it doesn't, we don't have to draw some kind of dichotomy, that we're talking about life here. And the sooner we realize that it's life that matters, and we can empathize with the other rather than grouping us together against the other, I think is better. But the media, that's not their role. That's not what they're doing.
You know, our officers, we train on de-escalation. We train on using the least amount of force. You know, we are the guardians, the helpers, the protectors of our communities. We have millions of contacts with people every year, and a fraction of those involve the use of force. And our officers are most often de-escalating situations before any type of hands-on force occurs. And I think that's important to mention that. And that's, we focus on that with our officers. The ability to communicate, the ability to de-escalate is at the forefront of what we teach and expect of our officers.
And unfortunately, we have that picture from the video of Eric Garner being set upon by three police officers and him saying over and over, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." What happened in New York City? What happened with Eric Garner?
So they administered a chokehold. It's banned in many departments, including ours, because of what can go wrong with the chokeholds. Many people have lost their lives through those chokeholds. And it was banned in New York City, and those officers used it anyway.
The problem I have is that sometimes, and most of the time, I've seen police vindicate bad behavior, vindicate people who have done something wrong. I mean, the deal in Ferguson, you know, the grand jury and the police department, totally behind the officer, didn't see nothing wrong. I mean, maybe he wasn't completely wrong, you know, and had some justification, but they didn't see anything wrong with that. Even in New York City, no one saw anything wrong and said, "Oh, we good police officers. We did our job. We did it the way it's supposed to be," in spite of the fact I just heard that the chokehold was banned. But they did okay. They did nothing wrong. And so when people are vindicating police officers for bad behavior, and in spite of the fact it's against their policy, then that's the problem. Americans do not see hope. And I like what Scott has said about we really need to get to the point where all lives matter. Kids' lives, adult lives, women's lives, men's lives, everybody's lives matter. And we need to approach policies, procedures, and training from that perspective.
The bottom line is that what happened there was indeed a tragedy. And it highlights issues that we have in this country with race relations and the police department. And we need to do more to build the relationship so that people, one, don't fear the police and that they trust us. Now, when I talked earlier about that, we have the formula for that. It's much easier said than done. A couple of the things we're working on in regards to building the relationships with our community of color. One, we've reduced the amount of juvenile kids of color in Duluth that are incarcerated at our juvenile center by 35% by partnering with NAACP, other community organizations, through the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative. I mean, there's things that we're doing to help improve these the issues that we face. We started a civilian review board, again, with the NAACP and other community partners. Started the police activity leagues earlier last year. We are constantly looking for ways where we can engage our communities of color to build those relationships. But I'll tell you, we do our, you know, CompStat meetings or community CompStat meetings or neighborhood meetings, and we, you know, struggle to get people there, particularly people of color. And relationships, you know, it does take two to build relationships. And Claudia's always engaged, but boy, We need to get more of our communities of color engaged in the relationship building.
For example, in New York City, would it be realistic to say that we're going to put officers on the street in a tough neighborhood for X amount of time, 3 months, 6 months, a year, and then we're going to rotate them into a different job where they see different people and they can have a chance to take kind of a psychological breather? Is that kind of a thing realistic?
Well, that's community policing. That's our officers taking the time to get to know people in their community. When I did community policing in the Hillside, I knew most houses on 4th, 5th, and 6th Street to 6th East, who lived there, who owned them. I have friends to this day where we celebrate Christmas together. We do different things from my job that people that in no way, shape, or form would I have gotten to know otherwise and through the community policing efforts of our department.
I think when the community policing is done properly, I think that it does work and it does improve police-community relations. I hear people talking. It wasn't the situation when I grew up because there weren't any black police officers in the community. They were all white. And the other thing, police officers did not come into the community unless they were called in there. They did not do regular policing, patrolling within my community when I grew up. But from larger cities, they said that they didn't have the problem with police community relations because the police officers live within the community. You know, their kids went to school together. They played sports together with the police kids, and the police parents were interacting with the community parents. And so that created a different relationship. And so somehow when police officers didn't have to live in the community and they had no attachment, they never had any attachment to the community they serve. They come from isolated community, what we call outstate, greater state, greater areas, where there's little diversity, and they come sometimes with preconceived notions about who people are. But if you're going to the same church, your kids are interacting together, you get to know each other on a family basis, then that's a different respect when you encounter them in the community. They understand that you are just ordinary people like them. Okay. And I think that maybe we need to look at how to hiring some police, some people from the community to do this work. Or either have some incentive for a police officer to live within the community they serve.
It sounds to me like Duluth has a lot of the right answers here. And it's unfortunate that police departments like Duluth's are not the ones being focused on right now, because maybe what we need to do is start looking around for the departments that are doing things right and using that more as a model.
I've been enlightened by the conversation as well. I learned some things. I got some ideas from the discussion, and I'd like to continue some of the things we started, working with the Duluth Police Department that we need to finalize. And maybe even continue to improve on. So I'm looking forward to that.
You know, I'll just wrap it up by saying that our officers want to be engaged with the community. They want to have good relationships. You know, through programs like the Citizens Police Academy, we can have citizen members come in, meet our officers, see why and how we train them with use of force. They get to see, your First Amendment rights. We go over First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, all the things that go into the training of our police officers. One night a week for 10 weeks. We've been doing that since 1997, and the citizens that go through that say comments like, boy, I can't believe he's a cop. I can't believe she's a cop. Because their stereotype of a police officer is based mostly on what they see on TV. And our police officers are human. They're compassionate. They're the guardians, helpers, protectors and peacemakers of our city. And we need to get our story, do a better job of getting our story out and all the good work that's done every day by our officers. And I say that we're not perfect, but we're trying to be the best we can be.
Community Conversations is a monthly program here on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson. Thanks to our guests, Claudie Washington, longtime member of the NAACP here in Duluth, Duluth Chief of Police Gordon Ramsey, and Scott Vollum, an associate professor of sociology and anthropology here at UMD. Community Conversations is produced by Lisa Johnson and funded by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.